Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Community Conversation. I'm Charles Compton. I head up news and public affairs here at WSKG. Over the next few months, we'll talk about child care and early child care learning in a series of live talk shows just like this one. Tonight, we'll look at child care through the eyes of parents. Where to find it? Why is it so hard to find? And what makes the care good or not so good? It does seem that the country is paying more attention to child care. In his State of the Union address, President Obama said that affordable child care is a national economic issue.
As a side issue, or as a women's issue, and treat it like the national economic priority that it is for all of us.
Listeners, do you have a child in child care, or are you looking for some care? What decisions have you made? Call 888-359-WSKG. That's 888-359-9754. You can also email us at news@wskg.org. That's news@wskg.org. Or you can post on our Facebook page, the WSKG Facebook page, and send us a tweet at WSKG. Joining me to talk about child care here in the Southern Tier is Jennifer Perney of the Family Enrichment Network. Jennifer, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Do you think that people are thinking more of child care as a societal problem, a problem that the entire nation faces?
I do think that some people are thinking that way, but there are still a lot of the population that we have to get to understand that message.
What's involved in getting them to understand that message? I mean, it's my kids have been grown for 20 years, and I remember the debate going on back in the 1980s over having adequate child care available. Why aren't we getting it?
I think that we need to get people to understand that investing in quality child care is what's important at this time, because the reality is that you need two working parents. You need two parents working, or there's a lot of single family households, and quality child care is expensive, and we need people to invest into it.
So do you whose responsibility is that then? Whose job is it to try to bring the public along? I mean, you realize the problem. I'm just learning about the problem here in New York State, but there are a lot of people who just know about their very specific issue, their problem of finding childcare for themselves or their grandchildren or whatever. Ever. Who's in charge of that?
I think everybody needs to be. Right now, parents have to pay for childcare. It's mostly on them. There's some state dollars, some federal dollars that are put into it, but the majority of the payment is out of the parents' pocket.
One of the things that we're seeing as we delve into this issue is there's a very distinct difference in some people's minds between daycare and early childhood education. Is there really a difference?
Well, we want people to look at child care as early care and learning. You want an environment for children that's not just safe, but that's educational.
And so how do you reach that balance? I mean, do you have early child care education, say, a couple hours a day and then balance it off with child care? Or is it a day-long experience?
It should all be wrapped up into one. Children learn through play. We want an environment that's developmentally appropriate for children. Children learn through play. So we got to get out of, people think of the school district and children are learning there, but they're not learning in early childhood programs. And that's not true. What they're learning in early childhood programs is developmentally appropriate for them. They're learning through play and hands-on experiences and hands-on learning and the interactions between the adults and the other children.
I have a pair of nephews. They're twins. And one is highly socialized. He goes to early childhood. He gets education, gets mm-hmm. classes because he had a hearing problem. The other one does not. And you can really see the difference. So at the very least, a good child care, I guess, teaches socialization.
It does teach it, and it teaches what's socially acceptable in schools, and it teaches them how to be prepared for school. But we want it to be a high-quality early learning experience for children so that they're better ready for school.
So how do I, as a parent, pick out a daycare that can provide that kind of experience?
Visiting the daycare is the most important thing. They have to go there. They have to feel comfortable sending their children there. They have to be able to ask questions and make sure that it's an environment that's good for them and their family.
What should I look for? I mean, warning signs, that kind of thing.
Well, there's a lot of information out there. Essentially, we want parents to look for high-quality child care. So they want to make sure that there's ratios are met, and that means that the adult per child ratios that are set forth either by the state or what's developmentally appropriate for the children. So you want, infants need more care, so you have to have less infants per adult. Preschoolers are a little bit more. So we want to
make sure. So do a head count. I mean, sit there and look at how many adults are standing there.
You're right. And make sure that there are good interactions between the adult and the child. You want to see that there's not way too many children for the space, that the group sizes are smaller. You want to see a learning environment. So it's, again, those interactions between the adult and the child are appropriate, and they're getting attention. There's toys. There's things for them to do throughout the day. You want a place that the family's welcome. The family, there's a lot of family involvement. The parents are welcome. Their input's welcome. They're allowed to go and visit the program all day long. And you want to see that the teacher is, or the caregivers in the classroom or in the program are educated, that they have ongoing learning and ongoing training and attend workshops and have some sort of educational background in what's appropriate for children.
Is there some sort of rating system? Can I Google something to see how good this daycare is?
Right now in New York State, there's no rating system. New York State has field tested Quality Stars New York. And Broome County was actually one of the sites locally that has some programs that were in Quality Stars New York. And that's essentially a rating system of one star would be meeting basic licensing regulations. And then the program can move up to a 5-star, which would mean that they're meeting better standards and they're a higher quality program. It's not fully implemented across the state right now. There's not been the funding at the state level put into the system yet.
Listeners, are you a parent of a newborn or will you soon be? Have you figured out what to do about child care? What did you decide? Give us a call at 888-359-WSKG. That's 888-359-9754. You can also post to the WSKG Facebook page or just go ahead and tweet us at WSKG. Curious about pre-kindergarten. It's been a point of discussion here in New York State for quite some time. When is a child eligible for pre-kindergarten?
Well, in New York State, most school districts now have UPK, Universal Pre-Kindergarten, eligible for the children. There's a variety of different options, and it really depends on school district.
When you talk about options, are you talking about kinds of pre-kindergarten?
Well, there's full day. Some school districts have full day options. Some have just the part day options. Some school districts contract out those UPK spots to community-based organizations, so child care centers that are out in the community. Then there are some school districts that they're rare, but there are some school districts that have no universal UPK options. There's one local here in Broome County, Susquehanna Valley School District, has no universal pre-K.
Now, is there a point when a child would be ineligible for pre-kindergarten?
Well, they're eligible essentially the year before they go to kindergarten, so their four-year-old year. There are some school districts that have grants to offer three-year-old UPK programs, but that's not universal across the state yet, just a few select school districts.
So if the child is younger than 4 years old, there's really not a whole lot out there in the way of early childhood education, maybe Montessori, something like that.
Well, there's the whole school district. It goes with the school district. So essentially, the cutoff date is December 1st for most school districts. So if a child turns 4 before December 1st, they're eligible for UPK that year. Then it's up to the parent to pay for a program. There's a lot of nursery school, preschools out in the community that are half-day programs through churches, things like that, typically 2.5-hour programs, because once they're 3-hour programs, they need to be licensed by the state. So there's a lot of those types of programs out in the community. Or child care centers. Some have curriculum-based programs, so they've got that educational piece built into the program.
The system seems a little biased in favor of rich kids, meaning if my parents can afford to send me to a nice daycare, then I will enter into grade school a little better off, maybe a little more prepared to learn my lessons. Is that the case, or am I just making that up?
I mean, I think that's what the state is trying to do in investing in UPK, is making it universal so that anybody, it doesn't matter how much the parent makes, so that every child has access to high-quality early learning experiences.
Now, can low-income parents take advantage of Head Start? Is that something hard for them to get into?
Nope. So Head Start is another option that is for children. Head Start is for 3- and 4-year-old children, and it's income-based. So if they're low-income, then they should be eligible for Head Start. In Broome County, for instance, there are two organizations that offer Head Start services. The school districts of Binghamton, Johnson City, and parts of Susquehanna Valley School District are run by Family Enrichment Network, and they would call Family Enrichment Network to sign up and apply for a Head Start spot. And then the outlying rural areas, basically, Endwell up to Whitney Point down to Windsor is operated by Opportunities for Broome Head Start. So again, they would call them. But yes, that's an option for parents to apply to. Spots are limited. So it's harder to get into.
Are they very limited? I mean, can you give me some idea? I need a little context there.
I don't have the exact number of slots at each. And it depends by, you know,
is there a lot more demand than there is supply?
Well, I know Family Enrichment Network typically has a waiting list, but we want people to still apply because, you know, a spot could open and you need to be ready to go. I would say that if you live in one of those service delivery areas for Head Start, call the agency that operates it and apply. That's what you need to do. Just apply because you're never going to know if you can get a spot or not.
Got a comment from Heather on our Facebook page. She says, a year of tuition at Binghamton University was less than a year of daycare at the JCC for our youngest. Does that surprise you?
That does not surprise me at all. Child care is expensive. It's expensive. It's expensive for parents to have to pay out of pocket. And we compare it every year to the cost of college.
And I mean, any idea of what, you know, how they say when you buy a house, you shouldn't be paying more than 25% of your income for on a mortgage payment. Are there any numbers or guidelines on how much a parent should be able to pay or plan on paying for
daycare? No, there's no guidelines set forth like that. A child care center charges what they charge. For instance, some programs will work with you. If you have multiple children, they'll offer discounts, second sibling discounts. Some operate on a sliding fee scale. It really depends on the program, and that would be something you would work out directly with the program. But in Broome County, for instance, we just pulled the numbers, and the average cost of care for an infant in a child care center is $193 a week. So when you multiply that out, which I didn't do the math in front of me, but it's a lot of money, and it's a lot more than most parents can afford. So therefore, you find that they choose cheaper childcare options. Might not necessarily be as good of quality, but it's a cheaper, easier childcare option.
So what needs to happen to make childcare more affordable for this region's residents?
We need a different way to design the system. A child care center can't operate alone on parent tuition. We need additional funding put into the system. We need businesses to understand how it affects their employees, and they need to invest into the system for their employees as well.
And so what you're saying is it's in a business's best interest if it invests in providing child care for their employees.
Absolutely.
Why?
Well, there's a lot of research out there that shows what the benefits it has for an employee. So if an employee doesn't have to worry about where their child is and worry about if they're safe or not, then they're going to produce better at work. They're going to have better attendance. So there's a lot of benefits for the business.
Is this region of New York State unique in the amount that people have to pay?
No.
For daycare? It's pretty standard everywhere.
It's pretty standard everywhere, and it's actually more expensive downstate. So, like, when you get closer to New York City, they're a lot more expensive.
Parents, what do you do to afford childcare? Give us a call at 888-359-WSKG. That's 888-359-9754. Or you can email us at news@wskg.org. That's news@wskg.org. You can also post to our Facebook page at the WSKG Facebook page or tweet us at WSKG. Now, the term education means different things to different people. What does education mean for an infant or a toddler?
Sure. It would be an environment that's developmentally appropriate for that child. So if it's an infant, it's an environment where they have an opportunity to be on the floor and to explore and use all of their different muscles, and having a caregiver who reads to them, who talks to them, who interacts with them, who smiles at them, who plays with them. That's what it would be for an infant, not, you know, putting them in an Nexus saucer or a swing in front of a TV. Or, you know, you want that interaction, and that's what you need to see for an infant. A toddler would be, you know, pretty similar. You know, again, you want somebody who's being read to and talked to and showed things and exposed to language and exposed to new experiences and opportunities.
I could never do that. I just don't have that skill set. This takes a special kind of vocation, doesn't it, to be able to provide that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That kind of thing for an infant. Thus the training programs we have, but we also have a lot of daycares out there where the staff is not as well trained.
Right. There, you know, a lot of daycare centers see a lot of turnover because they're low paying jobs. Somebody in a daycare center is not going to make, even though they're, you know, a teacher, essentially, they're not going to make the same as a public school teacher. So you want somebody in a daycare center who has experience, who has education. But if they have a 4-year, you know, degree and they're a certified teacher, they're waiting for that job in the school district because they're going to make triple the amount of money than they are going to in a daycare center. So daycare centers do see a lot of turnover based on the low wages.
And we have a call. I'd like to bring up Susan from Tioga County. Susan, you're on the air.
Hi. Just a perfect segue about the low wages. I'm a former preschool teacher many years ago. I'm an older retired person now. But I've had grave concern over the state's differences amongst states. And I'd like to suggest that perhaps if the state of New York is getting serious about increasing availability and consistency and quality of early child care, that they perhaps should look at North Carolina as a model. It's absolutely astounding there that preschool teachers are considered super valuable professionals through some state funding, as you guys had mentioned a little earlier tonight, some subsidies, and also communities and businesses investing. And the pay is spectacular. I mean, I stopped working in that field because, you know, minimum wage just wasn't cutting it, you know.
Jennifer, thank you so much for calling. So there's the problem. It's a question of leadership, too. It requires state leaders, community leaders to be willing to stand up and say this is important and we need to find ways to fund it, to make it more available, to provide quality daycare.
It is. And the CCRNRs, the Child Care Resource and Referrals, what I do here in Broome County and Tioga County and Chenango County, that we're across the state and we always are advocating for this and for better wages for the staff at child and who work in child care.
Do you think cost is an issue when a parent is picking out a daycare in the sense that, well, it's not as nice a place as I would like, but it's what I can afford? Are those parents kind of stuck?
I absolutely think they are, and I absolutely think convenience too. You know, I don't want to drive all the way across town when, you know, there's one right a child care program right down the street or across the street or on my way to work. I absolutely think that plays a factor.
Do they ever come to you for advice on how to deal with that, and what do you tell them?
Yeah, so my agency does referrals for parents who are looking for child care, and part of that is offering the education piece of that as well on the things to look for, like we were talking earlier, what are the quality indicators of child care and what are some warning signs and things not to look for, but also helping them try to make that find that arrangement that best meets their needs, but also letting them know why you want quality childcare, why it's so important, and you should want to have quality childcare.
And one final thought, mm-hmm. This came to us via Twitter. Catholic Schools says, early childhood education prepares children for schooling, especially kindergarten. Academics are a focus. Is that the goal, preparing kids for school? Should it prepare for anything else, like life, for example? Do those things conflict?
No, I think it's all wrapped up into one. You're preparing children for life. You're preparing them for school. But you're also just preparing them to have a good future and to be good people and to trust the world.
Jennifer Perney, thank you so much for coming in and walking us through this evening.
Thank you.
Jennifer Perney is a child care resource and referral director at the Family Enrichment Network. Stay with us. We'll be back with more of this community conversation right after a break. I'm Charles Compton on WSKG.
Bye. On the next Morning Edition, why the wife of Afghanistan's new president wants the world to see Afghan women differently.
They're very strong women. They're very resilient. So I usually cringe when I read in the press about, oh, these poor Afghan women.
I'm Renee Montaigne. We sit down with Rula Ghani, the First Lady of Afghanistan, on the next Morning Edition.
Tomorrow morning from 5 to 9 on WSKG.
Looking for ways to get the kids in your life up and moving? Check out WSKG's Kids in Motion videos online. They're fun and simple movement activities, easy to do at home or in a classroom.
Today, we're going to play a game called Mystery Bag Fitness.
Today, we are going to learn action words in Spanish.
And we're going to play a game today called Twizzle.
Live healthy!
Learn and move with Kids in Motion videos online at WSKG.org. Click Educate, then Kids-Motion.
And welcome back to WSKG's Community Conversation about Child Care. Parents, how do you find child care? Give us a call. The number's 888-359-WSKG. That's 888-359-9754. I flubbed that. I'm going to give it to you one more time. 888-359-9754. You can also email us at news@wskg.org. And post on our Facebook page if you'd like. It's the WSKG Facebook page. We've had a couple people post there already this evening. Or you can tweet us at WSKG. With me now is Solveig Rostvedt. She's a WSKG's education reporter. Solveig, thanks for coming inside.
Glad to be here.
She covers education all over the region. And the last few weeks or so, she's been spending some time really looking into the child care and early childhood education issues in our region. Solveig, we heard from Jennifer Perney about New York's high cost for child care. So what does it mean that New York is the least affordable state for child care?
Right. So that particular statement comes from a report by this advocacy group called Child Care Aware. And so they rank states on affordability. And this past year, as well as for the past 2 years, New York has been the least affordable state. So what actually happens is they compare the cost of care in each state to the state median income, so what most people make, and then they get a percentage from that, and that's considered the affordability. So, for example, in New York, care is about averaging 15% of income for a two-parent family, and actually for a single mom, it's over 50% of income. So that's what they mean by the affordability. It's kind of a way of adjusting for different income levels in the different states.
So what they're trying to do is figure out what your true need is and then adjust accordingly.
Exactly. So people in different states make different wages, and so you have to adjust the affordability accordingly. That's right.
Well, how are things going in other states? Pennsylvania, for example.
Right. So the middle of the road states in terms of affordability have care that's just over 10% of income for a two-parent family. And Pennsylvania is actually right there in the middle. It's about number 30 in the list. So, but we should still keep in mind that even in those middle ground states, a single mom is still going to be paying around 40% of her paycheck for childcare. So on the top of the affordability, we have South Dakota and Louisiana. Care for an infant there is averaging just over $5,000 a year. And actually in New York, the cost is about triple that. So that's a big jump.
Any theories as to why it's so much cheaper in some places and so much more expensive in other places like New York State?
Right. Yeah. Well, one of the big drivers of cost is regulation. So child care centers face all kinds of regulations from the state. A lot of those have to do with like the number of kids per teacher or per provider, or even things as small as the size of the room or the number of windows. There are regulations about all kinds of things different in every state. So those can really drive up cost for a center if they have to be having a lot of teachers or making renovations. So that report from Child Care Aware also ranks the states on how the programs are regulated. And one of the really interesting things is that Louisiana, remember, is the most affordable state for childcare, and it's also at the very bottom in terms of regulation. So it's one of the least regulated states. And there's also a broader correlation. So many of the states that are on the top in terms of affordability are on the bottom in terms of regulation.
Yeah, and you can hear regulation, but you might be thinking quality, because these regulations are designed to ensure that the kids have quality care, that they're safe, they're secure, they're dry, that whole thing. So you got that balancing act between quality childcare and cost.
Exactly. And that's what it really comes down to. Regulation is expensive, but that's also, I mean, there are reasons for the regulations. That's how states make sure that the child care is safe and that the child care is doing what it's supposed to do. So there is a real trade-off, and you can see that in the most expensive states being also the most regulated.
You're listening to Community Conversation on WSKG. I'm Charles Compton, along with Solveig Wastvedt. If you want to join in this conversation about child care, give us a call at 888-359-WSKG. That's 888-359-9754. You can also Facebook us, or you can tweet at us. Lots of ways to join in the conversation. Low-income families, though, they can get help with paying for their child care. New York State sets aside money for subsidies, and the federal government also contributes. Does that make up for the higher costs in New York State? Is the aid keeping up with the cost?
Right. So that is true. There are subsidies for low-income families in a lot of states, and including New York. So, for example, in the U.S. as a whole, in 2011, low-income families with the mom working paid about a third less than higher-income families for child care. But what you really have to do, or what you should also do, is look at percents. So the subsidies don't seem to be as effective when you look at percent of income. So those low-income parents that were paying less were actually spending about 40% of their paycheck compared to just 7% for the wealthier ones. So it really comes down to the fact that the subsidies just aren't big enough to make up for that gap in the family income.
What I found interesting as we were preparing for the program is that the military, the Department of Defense, is actually building a pretty good child care, early childhood education program itself. Can you tell me a little bit about how it's doing it and how it's trying to make it affordable?
Yeah, they really have an interesting program going on all across the country for military families. So remember that list that ranked states based on how well they regulated childcare? Well, the very top of that list actually isn't a state at all. It's the Department of Defense and their childcare program. So they run childcare centers on most military bases for families that have kids. And they also partner with providers in communities for parents who don't live on a base. So for parents who just live out in the community. The really notable thing is that the DOD has its own set of rules. So they regulate their child care centers, and every center has to be accredited by a national organization. So that actually isn't true for civilian centers. That's one thing that many people bring up as something that maybe should take place, that these centers should have to be accredited. But in the military, they do. And the program is really popular. So a report that the military put out just last month found really long waiting lists for the centers, and especially for young kids, for infants.
You got to wonder. I mean, obviously there's politics everywhere. On the state level, a lot of politics. In the Department of Defense, not so much. You kind of have to wonder what part politics plays in the building of a daycare system.
Yeah, that's true. And one thing that, you know, that sticks out about this system is it's all across the country, and it's just a very sort of uniform system. Actually, one development recently was the Department of Defense just came out with a website where parents can access these child care centers in one portal. So you can just go in there and put in where your base is, and then it gets out a list of the centers. It's just very well organized, and I guess that's one thing that they really have going for them is that organization. Yeah.
And let's get back to the cost for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So how are military parents managing to pay for their child care under this scenario?
Well, that's the other thing. So prices are a lot cheaper in this system. And the military charges parents on a sliding scale. So it's based on income. Lower income families pay less. So the lowest tier is just $50 a week, and the highest is $140. That's a lot lower than the average cost in New York, which is over $200 a week. And so military parents who don't live on a base can get subsidized care at regular centers, which puts them right down at that same cost level. So it is much cheaper.
Got another caller on hold. It's Emily from Binghamton. Emily, how's it going this evening?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm fine. What's on your mind?
I'm just concerned with the lack of sustainability of quality centers in our community. And how do we better support that through public-private partnerships to maintain the quality and also to keep those centers open?
Okay, thanks a lot for joining us, Emily. So any reaction or response to that, Solveig?
Well, That's exactly right. One thing that I have heard from several providers is that there are some issues with some of the public funding. So there's a lot of funding for pre-kindergarten, and that funding can go to public schools, and centers can get subsidies. So the Department of Social Services provides low-income families subsidies, but a lot of providers are saying that those subsidies don't match up to what it actually costs to provide the care. And so a lot of people are saying that the state needs to take another look at what the subsidy amounts are that are provided and maybe match that up more closely to the actual cost. So there are a lot of centers out there that are struggling right now.
Solveig, thanks for your time.
Well, glad to be here.
She was a WSKG's education reporter, Solveig Wasvet. We'll be right back with an actual parent, so stick around.
When Amy Webb turned 30, she decided to find her true love on an online dating site. And to do it right, she hacked the algorithm to find the perfect man.
And as it turns out, I was the most popular person online.
Stories of how we love. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Thursday at 1 and 7 on WSKG.
Elmo, Grover, Abby Cadabby, and friends are coming to Elmira and Binghamton when Sesame Street Live presents Make a New Friend. Your WSKG Family Day ticket includes a pre-show photo opportunity with Sesame Street friends at the Clemens Center, Elmira, March 17th at 3:30 p.m. and at the Forum in Binghamton, March 24th at 3 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. Find out more and purchase tickets online at wskg.org/sesame.
Charlie, this is crazy on like 10 different levels. What do you and Phil know about running a daycare?
This is not rocket science, all right? We applied for a license the other day. It couldn't be any more simple.
Charlie.
Okay, Lillian, what you want? The rocket ship? Wow. Okay, that's what you wanted, right?
Milk.
Oh, you wanted milk? I'm sorry, you want milk. What do you think about this?
Welcome back to Community Conversation on WSKG. I'm Charles Compton. Not everyone can run a daycare, that's for sure. That was Eddie Murphy and Regina King in the movie Daddy Daycare, if you were wondering what that was. In this segment, we went to talk to someone who actually runs a daycare and a parent who sends a child there. But this particular child care is unusual. It's free for parents who are college students. With me is Laura Bowen, the executive director of Mom's House in Johnson City. Laura, thanks for joining us here this evening.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Jennifer Hegelke. She's a Binghamton University student, and you have a son who's attending Mom's House. Jennifer, also thank you for being here this evening as well.
Pleasure to be here. Thank
you. Laura, let's get back to that original point. How often, as according to Daddy Daycare seems to imply, how often does daycare become the mom's job?
How often does daycare become the mom's job?
Yeah, something mom is, she's got to hunt it down, she's got to come up with the money for it, she's got to pick it, you know.
Well, Mom's House, actually, we offer free daycare to low-income single parents. Mm-hmm. So in our case, actually, we have one male attending Mom's House right now, but in our case, all the moms are the ones that are actually seeking out our services and looking into the quality of our daycare, and you know, that's how we operate anyway.
Yeah, are you guys the exception to the rule, or do you think that tends to be the case around the system?
You mean as far as the mom looking for?
Yeah, being the mom's primary principal daycare provider.
Yeah. I would say yes. I'm sure that's the rule, that the moms are generally the ones that are looking for that appropriate or daycare.
Jennifer, we've been hearing a lot from parents who are trying to find daycare. How did you manage to find Mom's House?
I heard about Mom's House through word of mouth from a friend of mine. I was looking for daycare for my son so that I could finish school. I only had 2 semesters left, and I wasn't finding anything that was affordable or acceptable in my mind to send my son to. And my friend's mom was like, well, haven't you heard of Mom's House? It's free if you're in school full-time and a single parent. So I found Mom's House, and it's been just like the biggest godsend. It's the greatest daycare.
Well, how does it work for you? Give me an idea of your typical day. Getting the kid ready, getting off to
right.
Work
so
and
so typical day. It's really like a cooperative. Like all the parents are involved in the daycare. So because it's free, the parents volunteer at the daycare 3 hours a week, and you also do 5 hours of fundraising because it's completely funded by grants, donations, things like that. So the place is always milling with the parents. We're there, we're doing the laundry, we're cleaning, we're like helping take the kids on walks. And it's really a big cooperative. And there's all kinds of events that we do for fundraising and things like that. And the day at Mom's House is really structured and educational as far as what they're doing with the children. And it's a really great facility. It's like the best idea ever.
So it kind of sounds like, if I'm hearing you right, what happens here is that you go in, you bring your son in as well. You maybe drop him off, but maybe you might stick around a little bit and work, do some chores,
right?
Then leave for class,
right?
And then come back and maybe do a little bit more.
Yeah. So there's that. So we at the beginning of each semester, we go over our schedules with the client administrator, Judy, and figure out when we can do our service time and things like that. And one of the big great perks is they will watch your child while you study. So there's a study room with computers and like cubicles, and you can really study as much as you want to. They'll just like fit you in the schedule. So like last semester I was studying there 15 hours a week, and that's like how I managed to get good grades. Otherwise I would have been doing it in the middle of the night after my son went to bed. So it's really, I mean, a lot of us end up being there pretty much anytime it's open and we're not in class. And it's just like the biggest support system. It really makes it possible to go to school and raise a child by yourself.
And you probably have learned a few tricks along the way. I mean, there you are, a new mom, a new parent, and I'm still trying to figure it out, and I've been doing it for 30 years. So you must be picking up some tricks from maybe the older mothers there.
Absolutely. I mean, so each of the classrooms has a teacher, and they're all amazing at what they do. I mean, like, they're totally born to do it. And then, in addition to that, there's a number of volunteers that come in to work, mostly older women, just because they want to. So there's always, like, plenty of mature support, people you can ask questions, like, talk about your child's behavior with. Like, we always know what's going on with our kids. You can call at any time of day and check, see what's going on. You can go in the classroom and participate whenever you want. The doors are always open. So, you know, you have this huge support system of people who've been doing this for a long time. They have their own kids, or they've been in childcare forever. And it's like, you know, the veterans are like the best. So
you got it figured out. I mean, it sounds like you got your day. You finish your day when you're supposed to, and mm-hmm. everybody is well rested and get ready for the next day. But what are you hearing from your friends who are not students about their search for daycare?
Well, I mean, I did that too, because I didn't go back to school until my son was almost 1.5, because it's pretty much impossible. I mean, my friends, most of them have one parent that stays at home, not because they can afford to do that. And I mean, they're living paycheck to paycheck, but because it would cost more to pay for childcare than what they would be making at work. So most of my friends have somebody staying home, or if they're lucky enough, the grandparents step in and are like basically raising the kids. But I actually don't know too many people who send their kids to daycare because they just don't make enough money. And the ones that do, you know, they go to some of the higher end ones, like better quality, but it's such a significant portion of their income. They're always asking, like, if there's a better way, is there another way we could do this, you know?
So, Laura mm-hmm. Bowen, your service is not for everybody. I mean, essentially, it only works because you have students there who do have some spare time that they can use running the daycare.
Right. Well, actually, our mission is to enable these parents to go to school and complete their education so that they can provide a brighter future for themselves and their child, so that they can earn that, you know, when they have future kids as well, they can earn the money that it takes to be able to put their other children in daycare. So so that's what, you know, what we
right.
do.
That's your mission.
Right.
We have a caller, Suzanne from Corning. Thanks for calling us at Community Conversation. What's on your mind?
Yes. Well, what's on my mind is what's been on my mind for at least 30 years. This issue of child care and the trilemma of quality versus cost, and the child care workers, their needs has been an issue that's been discussed in this way for a very long time. And every time new parents have children, it becomes an issue for them, but then unfortunately they're so overwhelmed by their own need to get quality child care and affordable child care that they can't invest politically in changing the situation. They go on, their children are perhaps in child care for the first 5 years of their life, but then they go on to a K-12 school, and it seems like there has to be a new generation every 5 years that faces this problem all over again. And you know, we need a change that's long term. So that means that we can't really rely on the parents to push for the change, and it really does have to be employers, politicians, and school districts that see that this is a need and an investment. It's
yes,
a long-term
Suzanne,
investment.
Well, I guess what I'm kind of wondering here, I think you and I are about the same age because my oldest is 30 years old. Have we got that new generation down, you and I? Have we, once we had our kids out of daycare, did we just leave that problem behind us and move on to the next one?
Well, certainly. I mean, yes, but not just us, politicians and employers. And, you know, I don't think that I've let the situation down.
Uh-huh.
But, yes, honestly, I've turned and worked for that school district, because at least with the school district you can make more money. But that said, it really is an issue that everyone has to take seriously.
Suzanne, thank you so much for giving us a call this evening. And we have another caller, Pamela, calling out of Binghamton. Pamela, what's on your mind? Let's try that. I'm sorry, Pamela. I pushed the wrong button. I'm still interested, though. What's on your mind?
I had a similar concern. How do we help sustain as a community the highest quality centers through that public-private partnership? That it does require a variety of funding sources to support the children and the families that want the programming, but also to make it a viable profession. Early child care providers, if they're working in a center-based or even a home-based program and they're single, they are eligible for the same type of public assistance that many of our parents are. And to me, that's just sad. So what do we do about it?
Well, thank you very much. What do we do about it, Laura? Any ideas?
That's the big question. You know, I don't know. It is very that's a very tough situation. I think we have to really express the need for quality daycare when these kids are little. I mean, the brain development, we know, mm-hmm. Is most important between the ages of infancy to age 3. So these are critical years that we need to be providing a good quality daycare center, a good quality educational system. I mean, even, you know, that teachers need to be trained to help provide that quality care from infancy, you know, throughout the preschool years. But how to do that? I mean, I think the case needs to be made. I think it is being made. But I think through public funding and through private, through the employer, to express that need and to get the word out there. I think it's just beginning.
Yeah, if I could just jump in. I've actually taken a couple of classes where this was a really central issue, a couple of feminist ethics and sociology classes. And I think that what's really vital is to convince the public that this is an investment for our whole culture, for our whole nation. So like Laurie said, the development of the brain from infancy to age 3 is so important, and so you're going to have these kids who are doing better in school. There's not going to be this like stress on the education system, and kids get a really good start. And also investing in in allowing people to be in the workforce or to go to school and finish their degree and get into the workforce so that you have like people functioning on a higher level. You don't have these people just trying to make ends meet and working minimum wage jobs just to get by. So if you make childcare more affordable, people are going to be able to do, you know, careers that they're qualified for, rather than like you have so many moms and increasingly stay-at-home dads who are like sitting on master's degrees because they can't afford to work, so there's this what they call brain drain. You have all this untapped human capital, if you want to put it that way. So it's really an investment for our whole economy.
Laura, I want to make sure that I did not leave people with a false impression. They might have thought that your daycare is staffed by parents solely. I mean, you have volunteers, you have professionals, and these are licensed. Licensed.
Yes.
Tell me about some of the process that they have to go through so they can provide quality child care.
Well, we are a licensed daycare center. So we follow the same regulations as every other daycare that is licensed in New York State. So we're proud to say that. Our teachers actually have a very low turnover rate for our teachers. They've been there for a very long time. They are credentialed. They have... you know, many have their bachelor's, a couple, and others have their CD, their child development credentials as well. So, and they also have to, as a state licensed daycare center, they have to every 2 years have 15 to 30 hours of additional education. So this is a lot of responsibility on the teacher. And here, you know, and we, again, the pay is not very good, unfortunately. But they're there because our teachers are there. They do believe in the Mom's House mission. And we do have an environment at Mom's House that, people want to stay. So that's our daycare center anyway. And I'm not sure about the other ones out there. But ours is very much a home atmosphere. It's a loving and caring environment. And that's from, you know, the teachers. I know that the parents feel that as well. And so it's the volunteers do too, you know. So we have that. It's a unique situation.
Jim on Twitter says child care needs both public and private support. Mm-hmm. Employers and many others do assist with subsidies as a benefit. So it's not unheard of, but it's maybe not as common as some people would like as well. What I'm curious about, ever since the State of the Union address and President Obama put this on the national agenda, have you heard the conversation shift, Annie? Are people talking more about early childhood education, more daycare, and maybe setting up a system similar to what we do for kids over the age of five?
Mm-hmm. Well, I hear it just because I'm in early childhood education. I mean, I hear all of the research going on, the need for quality daycare. I hear of all of the the brain development and so forth of these children and so forth, and just that we provide a stimulating atmosphere for them, and how important that is, and how important quality daycare center. I mean, there have been recent studies that show that providing quality daycare for especially low income families that even 10, 20 years down the road makes a huge difference in their lives, that you can trace it back to the quality of daycare that they got way back, you know. So it does, there's, you know, there. So anyway, it's very important that, and that is the discussion that we're hearing, that I'm hearing, and whether it does need to be more vocalized as well.
And there's an undercurrent out there where people say that parents need to raise their own children. It's not it's not government's, it's not society's responsibility. Do you hear that, and how do you respond to that? Well, I'll ask both of you that.
I will just say, too, with that question, we live in a two-income society right now. I think it's very tough for, for one parent to stay home. Just the cost of living doesn't allow that.
Yeah, I think that often, frankly, is coming from an uninformed place, just people who maybe don't have children of their own or have had luxuries that most of the rest of society does not have. For example, the whole first year of my son's life, I worked nights because I felt lucky to have an employer who worked with me with my schedule. So I worked nights until 2 o'clock in the morning. And then I had to get up with my son at 6 because his dad left for his construction job at 6:30. And so I was home with him all day. And then his dad was home with him all night. So, you know, it's, and of course we had to have two incomes, but it wasn't sustainable. We were completely sleep deprived. I mean, you're not really there for your child like you want to be when you're strapped like that. And I think that people who have that opinion just frankly don't fully understand the complications of raising a child without any sort of assistance.
It used to be, back when we were cave people, that our children were raised by the village. I mean, Hillary Clinton said that back in the 90s as well. Is that true, or are we having to have to rework the way our society works now because of, we don't live in caves anymore. Mm. We need cable TV, and we want to drive SUVs and that sort of thing.
Well, I would say that's even changing even in the last, I don't know, a couple of decades. Like, when I was a kid, my grandparents were a huge part of raising us. And I think that now, you know, people are moving away when they graduate college and starting their families away from where they grew up, away from their families. And a lot of people are working longer and not retiring as soon. So you don't have the grandparent support that you once did, you know, because of the economy or whatever. So I think that, like, even fairly recently, you can see a big change there. Which is making the childcare issue even more urgent. And I think any young family that you talk to is kind of experiencing this in one way or another.
Laura, your thoughts? Mm-hmm.
I agree with you. I think it's the economy is a lot tougher for one parent to work. I think both need to work today. I think across the board, if you ask any parent that has small children, I think one would like to stay home, but I think they can't afford to, and that's what I hear anyway.
Now, your daycare is a local charity, mm-hmm. it's a local organization, but it's actually, you can trace its roots back to Pennsylvania. Can you tell me a little bit about your history?
It started in 1983 in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, and the Mom's House here opened in 1988. Johnstown is our parent corporation. We have been in operation for since 1988, so we've come a long way. We've built our own facility in Johnson City, so we're centrally located for our parents who attend BCC, BU, or area high schools or trade schools. So we are privately funded. We take very little public funding, actually. So I think 3% of our funding comes from the government. The rest is from pledges, donations, grants, fundraisers. We have lots of fundraisers to support our program.
It's almost a nonstop kind of kind of deal in order to raise money, and everybody gets involved in the process of raising funds. Yeah. Before we go, Jennifer, how did you find Mom's Place?
It was through word of mouth from a friend. Although now that I'm aware that it's out there, I feel like, you know, we put out a lot of information telling people that we're there, but I had never heard of it until I was, you know, kind of crying to my friend's mom about it, about how I couldn't find anywhere for Abel that I would leave him. And she told me about Mom's House, and, you know, she told me, she phrased it, it's a free daycare if you're in school run by little old grandmas, which is partially true. It's really a great community, sort of cooperative family feel.
Do you have a waiting list? I mean, do you have many more people wanting in than you have seats?
Well, we do in the infant. We have a waiting list in the infant room. So, and for us, because the more we have, we do not get additional funding. So, we really weigh heavily, you know, what to do. Because when we have more enrollment, our costs go up, and our income doesn't go up accordingly. So, right now in the infant room, usually that's our most in-demand room. So right now, yes, we have a waiting list there. And the rest, we have, we're full in two of the other rooms. We have one room that we could take more.
Well, something I just wanted to, real quick, something that's unique about Mom's House is they do take infants. The infant room is the kids are newborns to 18 months, and there's a lot of daycares that won't take your child until they're 18 months old. So I think that could be part of why there's such a huge demand.
We're out of time. I want to thank both of you for being here this evening. Again, we're very, very grateful. My guests in this segment were Laura Bone, who is Executive Director of Mom's House in Johnson City, and Binghamton University Senior Jennifer Hegelke. Thank you again. I appreciate that. And that's it for this evening's community conversation, but we're not done. Join us in 1 month on March 18th to talk about the state and federal policies that could make childcare more affordable. Thank you also to WSKG's Jackie Stapleton, Dan Davis, and Matt Richmond. Our engineer tonight was Eric Adler. Sarah Gager was at the board. Crystal Sarakis screened our calls. Monica Sandretsky is live tweeted the show. And Brett Jaspers, our producer and director. Thanks to everyone for listening. I'm Charles Compton.